You're listening to Reality Sandwich Radio, where every Thursday at noon we serve up a palatable taste of the truth on topics of the mind, body, spirit, and our planet, community, and economy. To learn more about the Healthful Living model, go to healthfulliving.org. Reality Sandwich is hosted by Julie Matthews, Certified Nutrition Consultant, and Martin Matthews, Certified Medical Hypnotherapist. Past episodes of Reality Sandwich are available for free download at realitysandwichradio.com. Thanks for listening.
I'm gonna love you like nobody's.
You're listening to 89.5 KPOO San Francisco, and welcome to Reality Sandwich, a palatable taste of the truth. We're here every Thursdays at noon. I'm Martin Matthews. I'm a certified clinical and medical hypnotherapist with Healthful Living, and I'm here today with my co-host,
Julie Matthews, Certified Nutrition Consultant.
And you can hear more about the show at realitysandwichradio.com.
And you can find out more about us at healthfulliving.org.
Today, I am so excited because we're talking about really my favorite subject, and there could be no greater subject than speaking about our health, our physical health, our overall health of our bodies, our minds, and longevity, meaning doing our best to have the longest possible life and the healthiest possible life. And clearly, when we look around in our world today at the rates of obesity, the rates of childhood illnesses, and I mean, really just so across the board, you can say that, you know, collectively we're not doing that great on overall health. Today, we have the author of the book, From Here to Longevity, in the studio, Dr. Mitra Ray, and she has a mission. Wants every one of us to live the longest, healthiest life possible. She was born in Calcutta, India. She studied electrical engineering initially at Cornell and received a bachelor's degree in 1986. And then she then went on to a biochemistry program at Stanford Medical School and received a PhD. In 1994, she made a life-altering discovery that changed her personal life and work forever. After trying conventional methods to clear excruciating back spasms and pain that she had, she tried everything from rest to pharmaceutical intervention. She then decided to change her diet, engage in an exercise program, shift her mental attitude, and her back pain subsided. And she tried preventative concepts such as whole foods nutrition and became a completely new direction for her and her research. Today, she shares what she's learned about prevention with thousands of people around the world through seminars in health and longevity. She's speaking tonight in Foster City. We'll hear more about that in a few moments, where she translates the fundamental laws and recent discoveries of science into practical solutions for daily life, something that each and every one of us needs. Welcome to the show, Dr. Mitra Ray.
Thank you. It's a pleasure being here.
Thank you so much for being on with us today. I mean, I just can't think of anything more important than speaking and teaching people how to understand in straightforward ways, you know, how their default programming, their default behavior affects the quality of their health and hence really everything in their worlds as they go through life. So I'm sure Julie's just chomping at the bit with about 27 questions because the book covers, as I was going through it, you've got common myths, you've got facts, you've got hard science. I mean, really something for anybody who needs to get into the data about health so that they can understand, you know, where they are and really how to align themselves with the goal of prevention of disease in our lives. So let's just begin with a little bit of background on what has driven you through the years and then now with the compilation of this book.
Well, I watched my parents, who were first-generation immigrants, and so was I, suffer the consequences of a very stressful lifestyle. My father died of his second heart attack, and my mother has dementia, and I didn't want to travel down that road. And I think that most of us have loved ones that have something or the other that is completely preventable. And when I was doing research, I was writing grants for cancer and Alzheimer's, et cetera, et cetera. But when I realized that when it came to my own health, here I was walking the halls with Nobel laureates, but I could not find the answers that I was looking for. And when I had to go to alternative sources, I just thought, I'm getting my PhD in biochemistry. Give me a break. You know, why don't I know this? Mm-hmm. And this ongoing search continues. It's a mission. It's my lifelong mission, I realize now, that if I can have a PhD from a place like Stanford Medical School and still not know how to basically take care of my health, something's wrong. Mm. I need to, you know, make it a mission to share my journey with everyone that I can.
Mm. Tell us about longevity, because I'd love to know your thoughts. You know, there's one thing is living to a particular age, but what does longevity really mean to you?
That's great. People often ask me, why are you worried about modern science? We're living longer because of modern science. Yes, that is true. We are living longer. That's our problem. And our genes are actually good enough to give us maybe 120 years of life. The question is, who wants to live 120 years and be attached to tubes and take pharmaceuticals and have their grandkids have to take care of them? That's not what I mean by longevity at all. I mean that the reports today say most of us, there's a pretty good chance you'll live past 100, believe it or not. And most people don't realize this. The baby boomers are going to be centenarians, and we need to look at them having a healthy life. Otherwise, we cannot afford, as a society, the baby boomers getting into, you know, being over 100 years old and all the chronic diseases. So it's about aging with style, dignity, and grace, really.
Mm. Good point. I think that's the biggest thing to me is people always talking about living longer, but I'm thinking, yeah, but after, if you're from 65 to 90, you have all of these conditions and all these medications and you're tired and you can't really do that much and you're depressed, then what good does it do to live another 25 years? It's just agony.
Yeah, how many of us think of 60 as the midway point? Now, if you have a long to-do list, this is good news because you have just doubled the time you've got to get it all done. But the reality is that 60 really could be midway, mm-hmm. in which case you really want to floss your teeth and take care of your health.
Well, yeah. It's a good point because we know people that are in their 60s. I even know people that are in their 40s that have already started saying things like, well, oh, it's because I'm getting older. And
yeah, that's just a really lousy excuse because, you know, they've done research at, say, Tufts University for over a decade now showing that a 90-year-old has pretty much the same capacity to build up lean body mass, which is a big sign of your real true age, not just your biological age, but your physiological age. And the capacity to make lean body mass is not much different than when you're 18.
Wow.
So that's the good news. The question is, I tell people, look, we all have lousy genes and good genes. We all are fighting cancer as I'm speaking to you here. It's only when the cancer cells become detectable by some human man-made instrument that, you know, we call it cancer. But we're all sitting here and we're fighting cancer in our body. So we have cancer genes, we have obesity genes, but I like to say we also have Tarzan and Jane genes. Let's express those genes. Mm-hmm. And food is going to determine. Nutrient genomics is a whole new arena. It's a whole new field that's emerging where we're looking at how nutrition affects the expression of the right genes in our body.
Mm-hmm.
So the body has all of the inherent programming it needs to be healthy, right, and to help itself live the life to which it is intended, or we could say programmed.
Exactly.
I'd often like to use this, you know, computer metaphor, mm-hmm. right? Because the inherent programming of our genes is to go through life, to do its best to evolve, to grow with time, to deal with the various circumstances that it bumps into in its environment, to learn from those, to adapt, and to go forward. But when we start rapidly messing with that system, both from exposure to all kinds of crazy things in our environment that the body has to then process out, and various mm-hmm. toxins, and then, of course, we have we could do, you know, several shows on the influence upon our internal chemistry from what our mind provides,
exactly.
and our thoughts, and mm-hmm. just simply the notion of ruminating on the fact that, oh, I'm 40 or, oh, I'm 50 now, and, oh, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
So then we set up a whole chain of events internally with respect to our expectations.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just so fascinating that, and we've done past shows on this, where our default behavior, the default American diet, is one where it engaging in the default makes matters worse.
Exactly.
And does a disservice.
I'll give you an example of a default health program. I'm living in London now, and I went to the British Museum, and I went down this big hallway where I saw this huge case where it had this nylon fabric that went back and forth down the hall of, you can imagine, a huge museum hall, okay? And it was embedded with all the pharmaceuticals that two people had taken in their lifetime. And the plaque said that the average person in Great Britain takes 14,000 pills, and they're less likely to take pharmaceuticals than Americans are. And it was a visual shock to my system. And what we don't appreciate is beyond what people are taking, which isn't working, and we can all get into that, but most people realize this, but the environmental impact of that, because we're taking, you know, all these estrogen products, we're taking hormones, we're taking antidepressants, whatever, all these products that are not going to be broken down in the current wastewater systems that we have in our cities. Mm-hmm. The wastewater systems that we have in our cities cannot break these things down. Some of these are endocrine disruptors, so now you're affecting wildlife at the point of discharge. And this has a huge impact up the food chain as well. Mm-hmm. So it's not just about our bodies, it's about the environment and the world we're living behind. I'm a mother of two children. I always, you know, this is why I'm on a mission. I want to leave the world a cleaner place, you know, mm-hmm. not to mention, you know, your health, it's everything for you. I don't care how much money you make. I don't care what a great life you have. If you wake up in the morning and you have a headache and your back hurts, blah, 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 you don't feel good, this is not going to be a good day for you, mm-hmm. right? And it doesn't have to be that way. And you're the only one that can be personally responsible for your health. If you start believing, you know, the medical institution as is, most medical doctors are not trained in plant-based medicine. Every part of their education pretty much is funded by the pharmaceutical industry mm-hmm. and the medical industry. It's an industry mm-hmm. with powerful lobbyists. And we're the ones that are paying with our tax dollars.
Mm-hmm. An industry that thrives off of illness.
Exactly. The average pharmaceutical takes, now there's some good news too. I don't want to make them sound like all the bad guys, because economics may end up helping us all out, because the average pharmaceutical takes $1.7 billion to create. A lot of that is lobbying money. Mm-hmm. A lot of that is research. Okay. So the whole pharmaceutical industry right now is about over $500 billion annual industry. Just think about that for a second. Mm-hmm. And then this is now shifting to a nutraceutical industry where they're starting to look at nutritional products. Why? A, they're cheaper to develop, and B, they might actually help you. Mm-hmm. Mm. Okay. So the good news is economics might have these people start shifting, because if it takes $1.7 billion to develop a drug, would they want you to have a cure for your disease? How could they possibly make back their money with a one-time purchase of a drug? No, they want you to have your symptoms, and they want you to just continually have to take this drug. Mm-hmm. But that system doesn't work.
There's an interesting thing I was reading the other day on Prozac versus 5-HTP, and how 5-HTP is found to be just as effective with literally almost no side effects compared to all of the side effects that you get with the pharmaceuticals. So, you know, that's just one of many, many examples.
Exactly. Today, you know, the advertising is for Prozac and they're squashing 5-HTP. But as soon as the pharmaceutical industries figure out a way to patent, and what they do, unfortunately, the way of thinking is they go to patent 5-HTP. They change it just a little bit mm-hmm. from the natural substance to something they think they can change the binding substrate or whatever, you know, change something so that it's patentable. Mm-hmm. And in their eyes, they're telling us it's more effective. I don't believe that at all. Mm-hmm. I think that we need to stick to what Mother Nature gave us in the first place, because that's what we evolved on.
Exactly.
I'm just going to interject here and ask the two of you just talk a little bit about what you were just mentioning, Prozac versus 5-HTP. And we were talking about depression treatments here. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Depression is, I don't know what the percentages are, but very pervasive in our country. And again, we can do a whole show on why that is. But there's, you know, many different approaches that people take, and there's drugs that they take which cast a wide net with respect to what they impact in the body versus natural ways of affecting our internal biochemistry. So can we just comment on that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm hogging the
show
ahead. Here.
Yeah, it's your show. Go ahead.
You're our guest.
Well, this leads me back to exercise, because here's the deal. the most powerful opiates that you make are in your own brain. Okay? You make exactly the chemical that triggers the opiate receptors that make you happy. And there's no chemical out in the world that's going to be more powerful in making you happy. Okay, we can get into the complicated physiology of Prozac versus other newer drugs. Yes, they're trying to improve on this side effect, but then you end up with a whole host of other side effects. I don't want to get into the discussion on, you know, the benefits of one pharmaceutical drug over another as the biochemistry changes. But what I will tell you this is, you know, most people don't like to exercise. And you know what? Evolutionarily speaking, that makes a lot of sense, because for most of our history on this planet, food was scarce. And even today, famine is what kills wild animals more than any other cause. Famine, just running out of food. Okay. So we're designed to conserve energy. So we have these thrifty genes that help to make us fat in this world where we have plenty of food, of course. And it also makes you lazy. You don't want to exercise. You don't, you know, you don't want, why don't you want to get up and exercise? Because you're not designed that way. Okay. Now, once you start exercising, though, you can create a positive feedback loop because you start to become happy. So if you can get over the initial inertia, more than Prozac or more than even the latest and greatest, you know, Wellbutrin, whatever you want to call these newer antidepressants, nothing works, in my opinion, as well as regular exercise.
I guess the challenge with that, of course, is that depressed people don't want to exercise.
Exactly. Well, you know, it can seem daunting. And, you know, in my lectures, I talk about some simple steps you can take that help to start changing your diet and changing your exercise program. Be realistic. Even if you start with 10 minutes a day, pick a time that is doable for you. If you walk for 10 minutes a day, you change your risk factor for heart disease. Just 10 minutes a day makes a difference.
And now they're showing that it doesn't have to be, like you said, all at once, but you could do 5 minutes here and it all adds up. It's all cumulative.
Yeah.
So even if you walked through the parking lot and walked up a flight of stairs and did a bunch of different just active things during the day, all of that makes a difference.
Yeah, I tell people, take the farthest, instead of fighting over parking space, take the farthest spot in the parking lot and walk.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get wet in the rain, great. Experience Mother Nature.
Yeah, anything is better than nothing, for sure.
So I want to talk a little bit about food because, of course, that's my favorite area. And I love some of the things you have in terms of some of the myths in your book. So I would love to just talk about a few of those. One of my favorite ones, of course, is about fat. So I think you have actually a couple. You have myth number one, eating fat makes you fat. Number two, eating cholesterol should be kept to a minimum. Number three, you should cook with unsaturated fat and avoid eating saturated fat. Number four, we should eat a low-fat diet. So out of four of the six myths are about fat. So I'd love for you to talk about my favorite subject, which is fat.
Well, you know, most of our brain is fat. Besides being water, if you don't look at the water, the rest of the mass in the brain is fat. And fat makes up the cells of our bodies. And so to have this mythology around fat, what I really am opposed to is fat substitutes. Okay, fat substitutes are the biggest dangers in our diet. And if you look at most refined foods, they've messed with the fat that was originally available to us. And actually, even since I wrote the book, my thinking on this, and I'm going to create a blog site from my website, From Here to Longevity, because we have to start looking at more of a plant-based diet, believe it or not, where the original fats are without spoiling them. Now, that doesn't mean you're supposed to use vegetable oil because it's already been refined out of the plant. As soon as we start to extract, things start to get messed up. So you want to look at whole foods and plant-based foods. And I was just recently highly influenced by Dr. Colin Campbell of the China Study. And realizing that the more plants we eat, we have such a synergistic, symbiotic relationship with plants. And they are the original source of all the nutrients we need, really, to exist, give or take. Now, the problem is with sterilization, I talk about this in my book, we do need a little bit of B12 and whatnot from the plant kingdom. So what's happening is it's a very complicated, confounded problem to study diet, because you might study what's going on with protein intake, but what kind of protein? Are you talking about wild meat, mm-hmm. or are you talking about, you know, animals that have been raised on a farm fed grains? Okay,
right.
A grain-fed diet doesn't serve an animal justice, and a limited diet. They're eating basically corn, wheat, that's it. And that's not a varied enough diet for the farm animals that we're eating.
Mm-hmm.
And then they get immune challenges and they are chronically inflamed and we're eating chronically inflamed flesh. That mm-hmm. I know doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of debate beyond that. So my best advice to you would be to make sure 90% of your diet is plant-based. And I'm talking nuts and seeds, you know, whole grains, not refined grains, and mostly fruits and vegetables.
Hmm. Well, I tend to be a huge fat fan, I have to say. I've done a lot of study on this, and I have to say that probably my diet is more than 40% fat.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a good percent animal fat, but I completely agree with you that you need that it's all about the quality. So back in the day when we had wild animals or even just well-raised cattle, they were grass-fed, they got sunlight, they were healthy, they ate their normal diet, their fat was high in DHA, CLA, all of these good things for the brain, and fat burning and energy. They were high in tryptophan, which was good for the brain, and now they're fed grain. And so when you feed them grain, they're going to be higher in the inflammatory fats, lower in the good anti-inflammatory fat. The whole, you know, I could go on and on. So really, to me, it's the quality of the food that really is the essential
right.
component there.
And given what's happening to our environment, more and more I'm leaning towards a plant-based diet because, okay, one day you hear salmon's good for you. Next day you hear salmon mm-hmm. has more inflammatory arachidonic acid than a piece of beef.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just not attracted to a piece of beef, so I might have neither now, you know. And so, but I will never avoid an avocado. When people say I'm not going to eat an avocado because it's full of fat, oh, please eat an
right.
avocado.
Right. Absolutely. And I feel sad for all these babies that are born who are just, their moms are on low fat diets and that just the havoc that wreaks on the nervous system. And
yeah, we want to be beautiful, beautiful hot babes when we're pregnant. That doesn't make any sense
right.
to me. That's when you're supposed to eat fat. And you're supposed to get fat. You're supposed to make fat milk.
Right.
and it doesn't work for a mother to avoid foods.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not saying go get a stick of butter and just eat that. That's not what I'm saying. But don't avoid the almonds and the raw nuts, the fat, the good fats that are found, especially from plants,
mm-hmm.
because you can't go wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
In your opinion, what are some of the common misgivings and mistakes that people are making out there with respect to this whole fat issue? So generally speaking, about things that people are consuming, maybe that are low fat or based on this illusory belief that they've been sold by the marketers.
Yeah.
And then let's segue a little bit into just picking up on what you were just mentioning about the pregnancy subject, because that's
yeah.
a big subject for us here.
Yeah. Okay. So those are...
I mean, with respect to, fat
yeah.
and... Because I know, because I've talked about this quite a lot with Julie, and now it's beginning to get me incensed when I see people that are caught between their own internal desire to be healthy and do the right thing
mm-hmm.
and these strong messages they keep getting
yes.
about, oh, I'm supposed to be doing low fat, low fat, low fat, even though they don't really internally know why.
Yeah. Well, hunter-gatherer societies that exist today eat 800 different kinds of plants. 800 different kinds of plants. There are over 195,000 plants on this planet with flowering edible parts. 195,000.
Hmm.
You know, in our original diet, we had 800 different kinds of plants. Today, you're hearing the recommendation of 5 a day. Maybe let's up it from 9 to 16, according to the World Health Organization. Okay. Most Americans get 2 or 3. This is actually the biggest problem.
Mm.
This actually, no matter what diet you look at, and there's still a lot of debate, it's not like I have all the answers. I don't think we in society have the right answers, because I can tell you at this point, just avoid. I would never buy chicken off the shelf anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's just gotten to the point where it's ridiculous. Like, People think chicken and fish are less fattening. The reality is they're just as fattening as a piece of steak. There isn't much difference in the amount of saturated fats, cholesterol, whatever in that. On the other hand, your body needs cholesterol, and you shouldn't be taking statin drugs that reduce the, you know, your mess with basically the biochemistry of making cholesterol, not to mention some other key antioxidants that require the same critical step that statin drugs stop, which is the production of coenzyme Q10, which is something you need to make in your muscles. That's why you have muscle atrophy sometimes associated with as a side effect of what doctors are taking as a preventative medicine. Mm-hmm. This just blows my mind. Okay, so in my book, I talk a lot about, you know, don't believe the hype about cholesterol. On the other hand, if you look at the fat profile of wild meat to domestic meat, you see a huge difference. The average serving of wild meat can have 7 grams of saturated fat, and the average serving of, did I say that backwards? Domestic meat can have 7 grams of saturated fat, and the average serving of wild meat can have less than a gram of saturated fat. So even the science is confounded by all these complicated issues. So this leads me all back to let's increase our plant intake. Let's get closer to the 800. This is why I've been promoting a product called Juice Plus for the last 12 years, because it ups the ante by 25 different servings of fruits and veg. They actually have the technology to dehydrate the powders from the juices of all these fruits and veg without the sugars. And they're the only product that I've seen with 10 peer-reviewed published research articles to back up what they're saying, that this really does provide the phytonutrients from a whole food approach, phytochemical-rich, plant-based diet. So this, I believe in ways of increasing plant food intake. If we can just do that, it alters everything for physiology. And I've seen that with people everywhere.
Absolutely. I think one of the things, too, about studies, like you were mentioning, is they'll do a study on whether it's protein or fat, or and they don't look at the quality. So exactly. I see these things saying low fat is good, but then you're not saying whether if someone reduced their overall fat and they reduced a lot of trans fats, that would be good. Yeah. But, so I think that there isn't a lot of good research on looking at the quality of these foods and doing research on those particular things. A lot of the studies, I think, have been flawed to some extent.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so confusing. And we can't necessarily wait another 50 years for everybody to get on board with the studies before we determine for ourselves how to proceed.
Yeah, I'm learning new stuff every day, too. For instance, we've been sold, on drinking dairy, okay, as a source of calcium. And the reality is that they squashed a bunch of studies, the government squashed a bunch of studies in order to support the dairy industry. It's an industry. We can't lose jobs, right? That's sometimes a bigger concern than health. The dairy industry, it gets complicated because, first of all, if you're going to drink milk, you're better off drinking the whole milk because it's a lower glycemic load, and make it organic and hopefully non-homogenized, which is really hard to find in this country.
Maybe even raw. If
you can find raw whole milk, if you're going to drink milk, that's a whole other story than what you get in the grocery store. Mm-hmm. Now, on top of that, I have to tell you that there are studies showing the more milk you drink, the greater your risk of osteoporosis. Mm-hmm. Go figure that one out. Okay.
I could give you one reason for that. Whole milk has a vitamin. If it's whole milk from a well-raised cow, you're going to have some good vitamin A and good vitamin D and other things. And vitamin A helps with calcium absorption, protein assimilation. And if you have your milk raw, then you have an enzyme called phosphatase. And phosphatase's sole purpose or main purpose is for calcium absorption. And to label something, to deem something pasteurized, actually the mechanism they use is zero phosphatase. So if you drink normal milk, which 99.9% of all people do, it's going to have zero of the enzyme to absorb the calcium. Yeah. So, of course, people are going to keep drinking milk and they're going to have more bone loss because they can't absorb any of the calcium. And so, yeah, it's really looking at the studies and looking at the quality. I keep going back to me, it's all about the quality. Mm-hmm. And the nice thing about vegetables is they're close to the earth. They haven't been accumulated with all the other toxins that poor ethically raised animals do have exposure to. And like you said, there's just so many good nutrients, and that's absolutely something our culture is deficient in. And forget the statistic, but there was a whole bunch of things about in Time magazine a few months ago about children. It was like children over the age of 2, their number one vegetable, maybe it's even over 6 months or something crazy, their number one vegetable is potatoes. Mm-hmm. And like over 50% of 2-year-olds eat French fries every day or something. So just an example of even when they are eating vegetables, they're eating French fries and they're considering that a vegetable.
Right, right. And actually, if you eat potatoes, say you're a vegan, right? I'd much rather see you eat potatoes than Twinkies, because either way, you could be a vegan, right?
Right.
So it's very complicated. Best thing to do is avoid refined foods. Mm-hmm. You have to do that and increase your intake of fruits and vegetables. Now, as far as meat, dairy, all that goes, organic, at least. And even organic, in this country, we have different standards than in Europe. When I buy organic milk in the UK, it lasts 2 days and then it spoils, mm-hmm. even though it's pasteurized, but it's not homogenized. So and I always say, your food should rot, mm-hmm. okay? If a self-respecting bacteria does not attack your food, you should not either. It's very simple, right?
Right.
Can you speak a little bit about some of those things that are in the foods that people are consuming today that's being allowed to be considered food? A lot of that stuff that we can't pronounce with 15 or 16 letters. I mean, you are a cellular biologist, right, from
yeah.
Stanford. So you're very well practiced in research in this area to tell us about what is this stuff doing to our bodies.
Well, trans fats, for example, okay? What they've done is taken this fatty acid chain, which normally we need these fatty acids. They make up the membranes of our cells. But when you eat a food with hydrogenated fat, what they've done, trans fat, hydrogenated fat, pretty much the same thing, what you're doing is you're taking a fat and you're switching the bonds. It's this hydrocarbon chain, and the bonds are going from one kind of isomer to another kind of isomer. Instead of going trans, they become cis. What that means is instead of having a kink in the chain, they now become straight and rigid. Okay, so that in itself is a problem. The second thing is we don't have enzymes, and I have pictures of this in my book. We don't have enzymes to process trans fat. So if you ever seen fat kind of float on the top of anything, mm-hmm. you know, imagine your blood with this fat kind of running through it that's just sticky and sticking to the sides of your arteries and things, and your body has no way to get rid of it. Your only hope as a cleanser is more fruits and vegetables.
Mm.
Hopefully some of this, you know, the nutrients are, I have tremendous faith in the healing ability of your own body,
mm-hmm.
and of plants. And the combination of the two is very powerful.
We were talking, and I saw some in your book as well, about the environment and your home environment and toxins and that sort of thing. And I'd love to know what your thoughts are around that. And I'm also curious, since I have you here, if there's anything different between the thought process of Europeans versus Americans in terms of toxins in their environment.
What I noticed about the Europeans is that while they do have, they seem to have a bit of a more governmental consciousness, if I might say that. I think the lobbying structure is there, but maybe it's not as powerful. I'm not sure. It's hard to say, because I've also seen really, you know, articles about how the pharmaceutical industry controls lobbying everywhere, pretty much in the industrialized world, where people have the money to spend on pharmaceuticals. For instance, menopause is not a disease in Africa because nobody can afford any menopausal drugs. Mm-hmm. So it's not in their consciousness, so it doesn't exist.
Wow.
You know, the way diseases, in my mind, are created is they study a reaction in the body. They see if a chemical can alter it. Then they kind of come up with a disease around it. You know, PMS has now been broken down to, I think, 5 other diseases, and for which you need a, you know, different drug. It's ridiculous when a little bioavailable, bioidentical natural progesterone cream can help you out a lot more mm-hmm. than any of these drugs. So there's always natural alternatives to all of this. And what were we talking about again?
I get so excited.
Oh yeah, environmental. Yes. Within the home, your home environment actually has a greater impact on your health than the outside environment. Mm. Okay, I believe in, for instance, one of the biggest things you can do is have plants in the house and sleep at night with the window open. I don't care how cold it is, because you need some fresh air circulating. Mm. Okay, that's really important. Oxygen. Okay, how important is that? And people literally, you know, hang out indoors in oxygen deprivation constantly, and they need to be near plants for that reason. So yet plants come into the picture once again. You know, we have such a symbiotic relationship with the plant kingdom, and we don't appreciate that. Mm. We don't protect our environment, and we don't honor what plants do for us. So anyway, like everything from carpet, I hate to see when you have those fluffy carpets and then a child is just taking in all these, you know, chemicals that we know are not good for the body. Mm-hmm. I do talk about that in my book quite a bit. Sudden infant death. What is that? Mm-hmm. That's when sometimes you have a new mattress and the baby is, the saliva goes into the new mattress and it releases all these plastics. Mm. That poison the child. Ugh. That's a very prominent theory right now about what is causing sudden infant death.
Mm. How do we wake people up? I mean,
well, you're doing a good job
we
here.
We talk about these things, and I just don't know whether it's a matter of consciousness, that some are innately more conscious and aware that they're thinking of all these factors that influence their health or the health of others in their family. Is it ignorance? Is it that we're all just being so affected by outside sources that are giving us our thoughts and telling us what to do? I mean, how do we shake people to help them to wake up and to say, you know what, I am in control here. I am the CEO of my body. Trillions of cells mm-hmm. in my body, mm-hmm. and I have a responsibility to look out for its well-being for the longest possible time that I can. I mean, we take on those roles in other parts of our lives, right. And how do we help people to re-grasp
People have a natural inclination, I think, to take care of themselves. And you're right. All of the above is true. We're being affected. I'm being affected as a scientist. Do you think I'm objective? No. I also am a product of this default health program mm-hmm. that we were born in. And I have to keep looking. But here's the thing. Sometimes I kick myself. Oh, I should have been doing this. I should have been doing that. Why didn't I think of that? You know? And the reality is I'm a lot better off by thinking at all about mm-hmm. it than not thinking about mm-hmm. it. Mm-hmm. So just to take the first step and say, you know what? I'm going to start thinking. I tell people, you know what? Think about the healthy cells in your body instead of the sick cells in your body. Because most of us ignore our health mm-hmm. until something goes wrong. And pain is the threshold, right? Pain is the way the body's telling you whatever you're doing, it ain't working. And so what do? You go seek out professional help. Sometimes people have what I call subclinical everything syndrome. Mm. They go to the doctor. Doctor can't even tell you what's wrong with you. We don't die of single causation. If we did an autopsy on everyone, we'd realize there are multiple pathologies going on here. Mm-hmm. You know, and we seek out specialists. And I have this figure in my book of this disease tree that's not bearing fruit. And you've got, you know, one person, one specialist, maybe your endocrinologist, wondering what's wrong with your hormones. Then a cardiologist is wondering what's wrong with your arteries. And they're all doing their thing, not taking into account the whole tree and what's feeding the roots of the tree, which is stress, mm-hmm. pharmaceuticals, hospital care, the USDA food guide pyramid. All these things are not working for us. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we have to start saying, you know what? I'm going to start thinking that it's my birthright to be healthy for 120 years. Mm. Start there, to be healthy and vital. And then I'm going to start my path. That's why my book is called From Here to Longevity. Okay? Mm-hmm. I'm on this path too with you, you know? And nobody has all the answers. I haven't met one person who's got all the answers, mm-hmm. by the way. Mm-hmm. But I think it's a conversation in our society that we need to, you know, be engaged in for ourselves. And you're better off doing something instead of nothing.
Absolutely. I mean, you're speaking directly now to the core of the purpose for the creation of Healthful Living that Julie and I are a part of, is essentially this notion is how do we help people to shift that default understanding back to themselves, back to understanding the roots of the tree and the fact that our role as a living being, organism, whether we're human or anything, is to nourish those roots, is to serve and provide the organism what it needs to thrive and do its best through time in dealing with all the stuff that it's going to bump into. And I sometimes will advocate anger Mm-hmm. Once we wake up to this information, because exactly. anger is a higher level emotion than mm-hmm. apathy.
Yes, absolutely.
Which is just, oh, the environment messed me up. Oh, all these beliefs I got from around the world messed me up. And, you know, oh, there's nothing I can do about it. Well, no, not true. You now have the information, so you are compelled as a living organism to do something about it. So maybe get angry. Maybe turn and look at the list of ingredients on a product and see all those different things and ask yourself, why the heck would I ever put those things in my body? Why would my government allow those things to be in my food? And I'm not saying you have to go out and become an activist tomorrow, but you know what? Your choice to continue something is your control that you have right now. And you can put that thing down and find something a little bit better for yourself. But it's in that moment asking yourself that question, am I nourishing myself with this or will it deplete me in some way? It's a very powerful distinction and not that terribly complex to help ourselves to gain in a moment-to-moment basis. And if we just start asking ourselves that at least just once, everybody listening, at least once today or tomorrow, begin there, you know, asking ourselves these questions, is what I'm doing nourishing myself and the future? As the Buddha said, who I am is what I have been. Mm-hmm. What I will become is what I do.
That's where the juice
right
is.
Now. Right now.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So From Here to Longevity speaks specifically about that paradigm. Mm-hmm. How do we help ourselves to understand what do we do mm-hmm. to nourish ourselves throughout? Julie, I think it's like you're jumping at me with a question, no?
Well, I just wanted to find out, you had some great things in the book on kind of places that people can start, what types of things people can do. And I know you had some things around exercise and diet things. So maybe you can share some of those with the audience.
Well, sometimes I take it all backwards and I talk about the 7 habits of highly miserable and unhealthy people.
Mm. Okay.
Sounds like a good place to start.
1 is don't take good tips from people who are healthy. I know it's not very PC, but when people go to their doctor and they look like they're going to drop dead of a heart attack any second, do you really want advice from somebody who doesn't look healthy?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And I find it amazing that you're looking at somebody who's healthy and you're trying to tell them, oh no, I'm doing good. Mm-hmm. I'm doing great. It's like, really? No, really? You know, so don't take good tips as a practice of being miserable, if you ask me.
Okay.
You know, don't drink water. Water. We're drinking everything else but the only thing that actually quenches our thirst.
Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculous, you know? I mean, of course you've heard the stories of what, you know, Coca-Cola to clean your toilet. I don't know. I've never done the experiment. Actually, I've done the experiment. It didn't work that well. But but whatever you hear, it's, you know, the only thing, you are mostly water. So you've got to replace this water. This is, one of my quotes is, the solution to pollution is dilution.
Hmm.
Okay. So you've got to drink lots of good, clean water. Okay. You've got to exercise. You know, people who don't exercise, and it's interesting to me because then you've got the people that are hyper about exercise, mm-hmm. that they are aerobically fit, but not nutritionally fit.
Mm-hmm.
They're producing all these extra free radicals from their 4-hour workout or obsessive whatever behavior. And yet they are eating whatever they want because for them it's just a caloric equation.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not getting the plant nutrients. People take supplements and they're popping vitamin supplements. Well, vitamins, hello, are just isolated nutrients that we isolated. You know, Linus Pauling today would have a field day with what we're doing with chromatography and realizing, you know what? Vitamins, initially the science discovered what was easy to discover first. It didn't discover what was important necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
And we had chromatography methods where we isolated 10, 20 nutrients and we thought, these are the vital mm-hmm. ones that we need. The vital minerals and etc., vitamin.
Right.
Now we have another word, phytonutrient, plant nutrients. And folks, it ain't 20. When you start to look at more sophisticated chromatography methods where we're able to isolate out the nutrients in food based on particle size and charge in more detail, we're finding there's over 25,000 peaks.
Wow.
And they all seem to be important. Resveratrol, for instance, comes from the skin of grapes. And it slows down the aging process in the body. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So we need to look at whole food-based nutrition as well. And athletes, to get back to the point about exercise, of course you should exercise, but please understand that I believe that exercise is more important for mental health, but your diet is more important for your physical body.
Mm.
80% of health for the physical body is really the food that you put in your mouth, and only, you know, 20, maybe even 10% is exercise as far as the physical body. Now, if you want to look buff, that's a whole other game, you know, but I'm just saying overall for longevity,
mm-hmm.
you want to not think just because you're exercising, you've got it all figured out either.
Right.
And on the other hand, if you're not exercising at all, chances are you're depressed.
Mm.
The two really go in hand in hand, I find. So exercise for mental health,
mm-hmm.
okay, as well as meditation and things like that, which leads me to another habit. You know, when people don't take time out for themselves, that's the biggest excuse, you know, especially women. I don't have time to exercise in the morning. I don't have time to meditate in the morning. I don't have time to slow down. I don't have time to reflect upon my life. I don't have time for this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you were dying and we had to take you to the hospital and you had to be, I mean, people choose the default health program where they end up spending most of their healthcare dollars in the last 2 weeks of life anyway when it's too late,
mm-hmm.
when it's forced upon you, and it's probably not going to help you at that point. Because now the sick cells are now outnumbering the healthy cells. Most, you know, while you still are functioning well enough to be going to work, take some time out so you can do your work better. So most, I give myself now, because I'm the mother of two small children, I give myself 3 hours in the morning to do a 1 hour workout. I give myself some leeway, you know, but I have to get my own personal time done in the morning. Otherwise, my day and doesn't end up having the same quality, and I'm not as effective at my work and the things that I do. So I make sure I take care of myself first so I can be a better mother, a better wife, a better spokesperson for health, you know, all the things that I do in my life.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really important. So, yeah.
Wow. That's great. We were just talking about that last night. Got to take care of the moms.
Yes. I mean,
the moms have to take care of everybody else.
Yes. Yeah. And you know, pregnancy, prenatal nutrition, you had mentioned that earlier, that's where it begins. That's the first environment of the DNA, first environment for DNA expression. I'll give you one example I talk about in my book. When the mother is stressed, there's a lot of cortisol running through the body. It's a stress hormone. That cortisol, in a healthy mother who's nutritionally fit, getting all that plant vegetation in their system, what happens is the cortisol gets broken down in the placenta so it doesn't reach the baby. Okay. So the way I talk about it is that when you have all the nutrients you need, then all enzyme-making shops are open for business. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But if the mother's not getting nutrition, the body's just busy trying to keep a viable pregnancy alive. It doesn't have the energy and the resources to break down cortisol. So now the cortisol reaches the baby's brain, and the baby is now stressed and set up for a lifetime of stress.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't want you to go back and blame your mothers about all of this, but the reality is for new moms, it's so important to pay attention to your nutrition.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Martin and I, since he's a hypnotherapist, talk all the time about ways that moms can reduce their stress for their own health and for their baby's health, and whether that's using hypnosis or relaxation or exercise or, you know, whatever those things that might assist in some of that, ways of reducing that stress in their life, so important. And I think that most moms, because most people in our society don't really think about that.
Yeah, they don't. Yeah, so I'm pregnant. Woohoo!
Yeah.
You've got that glow, you know, and Mother Nature goes a long way. Here's the thing. Mother Nature does do its best to try to take care of us. But I also tell people, beyond your reproductive years, Mother Nature really doesn't care.
Mm.
Well, and Mother Nature's been messed with quite a bit by some stuff we've been doing to the planet in the last 100 years.
Yes, yes.
You know, and I know she's pretty darn smart, but, you know, it takes a heck of a learning curve. And we're learning more and more every year.
Yeah.
Scientific research is validating this, that our bodies are not able to keep up with the speed and pace of the change and the stuff that we're throwing at it. 80,000 chemicals out there that have been untested. You were saying just before the show, the number of pharmaceuticals now that are being pitched and marketed to our children that have not been adequately tested on children.
Yes. That's amazing to me. That was in my Stanford Medical School alumni magazine. 70% of prescription drugs given to children have never been tested on children.
Ugh.
So when you take your kid to the doctor, he or she is a lab rat, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
This is why I believe in homeopathy. Mm-hmm. Even if you were terribly misdiagnosed by a homeopath,
right,
it wouldn't really kill you.
Right.
You know, so it's really important to look at that. Absolutely.
Wow.
So it brings us back to our own personal responsibility, and it's absolutely imperative that as human beings, as people, that we take it upon ourselves to regain our role as CEO of our organism of cells, to do our best to look out for, you know, to co-create the vision. You know, what do we have?
Yes.
What's our mission? What's our purpose? What's our why? And I think it's pretty easy to say that most of us would like to live a long, happy, and healthy life. Hence, we've got to take control of that and be responsible for what we're putting inside of it, to affect how the organism operates, what we're exposing it to. You made some very strong points today that our inner household environment is more important than what's going on around when we walk around outside. And I implore people to go back and listen to those points in the show and you know, sketch things down for yourself. See where you can begin. Pick up the book. Where can people read about it? It's
from here to longevity.com is my website where you can actually read the first chapter. And I have a newsletter that you can sign up for. And I'm also going to be speaking tonight from 7 to 8:30 at the Crown Plaza Hotel. That's 1221 Chess Drive in Foster City, 94404. And you can also call Sandra Watmore to reserve a seat, 415-279-3595.
Well, thank you so much for being on today. I love talking about these broader health subjects because it really is. I mean, I can't find anything else more important for us to speak about. We can talk about the effects of the economy and all these other things all day long, but those are all outside peripheral, you know, influences upon our
life. Well, that's a very good point, because once you start taking care of what's good for us, you automatically end up making better choices for the planet. For instance, if you eat, the average person in America consumes, you know, 175 or some gallons of water a day. But as soon as you have a piece of steak or a hamburger that's been raised by the traditional methods of farming in this country, you up your water consumption, just one hamburger, by 3,000 gallons, because it took 3,000 gallons of water to produce that hamburger.
Wow.
And we're running out of fresh water in this country. Most people don't even know that.
Right, right.
We can affect the shift one person at a time. We have to put our own mask on before we help the person next to us, and it increases our ability to do so. Dr. Mitra Ray, the book is From Here to Longevity. If you can go to fromheretolongevity.com to learn more about the book. And you can hear this show and all past shows of Reality Sandwich at realitysandwichradio.com.
I just wanted to say, I forgot, I'm teaching a class this weekend. So if anybody's interested, I'm teaching a class on, it's called Cooking for Baby, and it's all about making your own, not only making your own baby food, but everything from nutrition for moms after childbirth to nutrition for nursing and first food introductions and making your own baby food and a variety of things on healthy foods for kids. So if you're interested in that, you can go to our website, which is healthfulliving.org, and you can find out more there.
And you can also go directly to nourishthefuture.com to hear about Julie's classes. My name is Martin Matthews. I'm a certified clinical and medical hypnotherapist with Healthful Living. You've been listening to Reality Sandwich on 89.5 KPOO San Francisco. We'll be back next week. You've been listening to Reality Sandwich on 89.5 KPOO San Francisco. This show and any past shows of Reality Sandwich are available for free download at realitysandwichradio.com, where you can also read about upcoming shows. To learn more about Julie Matthews or Martin Matthews, go to healthfulliving.org. Thanks for listening.